next message of greeting to our conference. On behalf of the office and members, officers and members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, I wish to extend warm greetings and congratulations to the Schiller Institute on the occasion of its 30th anniversary. The IAM and the Schiller Institute have long shared a vision for a world built upon progressive concepts and ideas leading to a better, brighter future for all nations. The application of sound economic principles, such as those contained in the proposed reauthorization of Glass-Steagall legislation, combined with a renewed emphasis on an innovation-driven industrial policy, in tandem with rebuilding the global energy distribution network, are the goals that capture the imagination of nations as we collectively seek to build productive, progressive, and sustainable societies. The IAM applauds the Schiller Institute for its monumental efforts to inform, educate, and promote the alternative ideas our entire planet is yearning for. Best wishes to all for a successful 30th anniversary celebration. R. Thomas Buffenbarger, International President, International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Now, our next speaker was not indicated on the program that we gave out, and for that we apologize, but to do the honors of it, of introducing him, I'm going to ask Helga LaRouche to come to the podium.
Well, it is my very great honor and pleasure to welcome our distinguished guest from China, who traveled all the way from China 2 days ago to attend this conference. He is retired Colonel Bao. He's a retired senior colonel of the PLA. He's a professor of military strategy. He also of the Academy of Military Sciences. He is also very fluent in several languages. When he was a soldier, he translated for the troops, Russian and English, and he received numerous awards for his own work on military strategy. He translated the German military strategist Clausewitz into German, and he is presently working on 10 volumes translation of German military strategists into Chinese. He's also an expert on space defense, and he has written very important articles about that. He has known about Lyndon LaRouche since the 70s, when he was for his studies in the United States, but he only came in 2007 in contact with us directly. Otherwise, I can say that I really, really love him.
Thank you so much for your kind words. Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, it gives me great pleasure to come to the U.S. beautiful metropolis of New York, a big apple on the occasion of 30th anniversary of Schiller Institute and its annual conference 2014. I think the symposium will give us opportunity to renew friendship and explore ways to further cooperation. First of all, I wish to express my sincere thanks to Mrs. Helga Zepp LaRouche, founder and president of the Institute, for the warm reception and sought for arrangement they had made for the meeting. The subject of my speech today is New Silk Road and the New Security Architecture for Asia. A historical review of the Chinese ancient Silk Road. Altogether 8 countries along the route. The Silk Road is a series of trade and culture transmission routes that were central to economic and cultural interaction throughout regions of the Asian continent. It connected the West and the East by linking traders, merchants, pilgrims, monks, and soldiers from China to the Mediterranean Sea during various periods of time. Extending 7,000 kilometers, the Silk Road gets its name from the lucrative trade of Chinese silk, which was carried out along its length and began during the Han Dynasty. Over 2,100 years ago, Zhang Qian, the Han Dynasty envoy, expanded the trade routes to Central Asia. Since then, commodities including silk, tea, and China ware have been transported from Chang'an, today's Xi'an, capital of Shanxi province, to Central Asia, West Asia, and even Europe via the trade route. And the commodities from these distillations also found their way back to China. Trade on the Silk Road was a significant factor in the development of the civilizations of China. The Indian subcontinent, Persia, Europe, and Arabia, it opened long-distance political and economic interactions between the civilizations. Though silk was suddenly the major items from China, many other goods were traded, and various technologies, religions, and philosophies were shared. In addition to economic trade, the Silk Road served as a means of cultural trade between the networking civilizations. After the Tang Dynasty, China's political center was shifted to the northern part, and its economic center was shifted to the eastern coast and the southern areas. Shipping became the top choice for commodity transport, and the Silk Road was later gradually abandoned. What is the new Silk Road like? The very mention of Silk Road evokes memories of the good old times for western region of China. Now, plans are afoot to bring back the glory days as China proposes a modern version of the world famous trade route. In a speech at Kazakhstan's Nazarbayev University in September 2013, Chinese President Xi Jinping proposed to establish a Silk Road economic belt, similar to the Silk Road of more than 2,000 years ago, to boost political and economic ties between China and Eurasian countries. Trans-Eurasian project would target more than 3 billion people and represent the single biggest market in the world, one with unparalleled potential. Although the ancient Silk Road was eventually replaced by shipping road via sea, China and Central Asia countries have great incentive to revive the historic link and the spirit of cooperation and mutual benefit. Compared with 2,000 years ago, current modes of transportation between China and the Central Asian countries are far swift and convenient. The railway from China to Central Asian countries is the major trunk of a new Eurasia land bridge. China's expressway joins Europe's E40 road through Central Asia. China has also opened flight to major Central Asia cities, including Almaty, Tashkent, and Dushanbe. Furthermore, China's Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region features 12 land ports along the border with Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. A comprehensive transport network across China and the Central Asian countries, including railways, roads, and air travel, have now been established. The revival of the Silk Road can be expected soon. A new security architecture for Asia. At a time when tensions roam over many parts of Asia, leaders from the 26-member conference on interaction and confidence-building measures in Asia, SICA, produced a milestone declaration at a recent summit in Shanghai. The declaration highlighted their strong political will to work together in an increasingly complex international environment. The success of the summit may come as a surprise for many, but the fact that the SICA leaders were able to formulate a collective response to common challenges is evidence that Asian countries remain committed to engaging in talks to solve their problems. Moreover, they are eager to play a leading role in regional affairs. This growing willingness to collaborate is rooted in ancient countries' shared aspirations for peace and development, while redoubling their efforts to reef up economic growth, improve living standards, and maintain social stability, they must cement bonds with one another in a pursuit of greater benefits. Take China, for instance. The rapidly emerging economy is ready to share its opportunities with neighbors. As the New Silk Road economic belt and the Marine Silk Road of the 21st century. At the same time, it needs their cooperation in addressing problems such as terrorism, cross-border crime, and the drug trafficking. Asia has been a pivotal engine driving the global economic recovery from the 2008 financial crisis. The sustainable development of Asia, which accounts for about two-thirds of the world's population and one-third of its total GDP, is a blessing to humanity. In this sense, high credit should be given to the SICA. At the recent summit, Chinese President Xi Jinping, as a conference host, expounded a new concept of security in Asia, proposing to advocate common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security. In his keynote speech, President Xi also proposed making SICA a security dialogue and a cooperation platform that covers the whole of Asia. He said, "No country should seek absolute security of itself at the expense of others. We cannot just have security for one or a few countries while leaving the rest insecure. A military alliance which is targeted at a third party is not conducive to common regional security. As I understand it, the commonness, comprehensiveness, cooperativeness, and sustainableness are four pillars of the new security architecture for Asia. And a security for all Asian countries is its keystone. The new security architecture for Asia is challenged by some people. Of course, Asia is an open continent. It welcomes major global players such as the United States. But as they get involved in the region, they must respect its realities and traditions. The past years have seen numerous cases in which the pursuit of national security resulted in the destabilization of countries in Asia. Unfortunately, such practices have yet to be cast aside. despite claims it would not take sides on territorial roles between China and some of its neighbors. Washington has openly supported its allies involved in the disputes, prompting many Chinese analysts to caution against their perceived to be a return to the containment policy. The fact is obvious in the past. When U.S. President Barack Obama came to office in 2009, he implemented a new strategic focus, that is, to rebalance the U.S. presence in the region to consolidate its dominance. The South China Sea is a huge area of about 3.5 million square kilometers. Chinese ownership of the island were recorded long before Christopher Columbus first sailed North America in 1492. And Ferdinand Magellan made his historical global voyages in the 16th century. But the United States is using the Philippines and Vietnam to make trouble for China by increasing tensions in this sea. It is clear that China's legitimate drilling for oil and gas has been disrupted by Vietnam's vessels. However, at a regional security forum, the Shangri-La Dialogue in Singapore, Kirk Hager, the United States Defense Secretary, has claimed that China's actions are destabilizing the Asian Pacific region. Of course, his speech was refuted by the experts immediately. One of the observers said the finger pointing served as an excuse of Washington to seek closer security relationship with Asian countries in an attempt to maintain its demolition role amid vast cuts in its military budget. Chinese president stated that security problems in Asia should be solved by Asians themselves, who are able to achieve regional peace and stability through cooperation. Yes, security problems in Asia should be solved by Asians themselves. Outsiders should consciously exit the game. That's all. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.